Coming up, talking Sacramento Kings and a whole bunch of teams on The Kevin O'Connor Show. Welcome back to another episode of The Kevin O'Connor Show. Fun night in the NBA with some upsets. We saw the Pistons go into New York, beat the Knicks 124-119. Cade had a massive game, 36 points on 27 shots. Talk about Cade later in the podcast today. If you missed my conversation last week with Bryce Simon, we dove deep into the Pistons as well, so be sure to check that out. Raptors beat the Warriors without Draymond. Grizzlies, Rockets had a great game down the stretch. Minnesota, Washington beat them up. Lakers had their first game back after two postponements due to the tragic Los Angeles fires. Wemby, LeBron, we're going to talk about them a bit later in the week. Also saw the Clippers and Heat face off. But today, we're doing a deep focus with the Sacramento Kings, a team riding a seven-game winning streak after it seemed like it was all over. Time to blow it up. Fired their coach. Things have turned around. So brought on Deuce and Mo to talk about that. And then later in the show, I answer a bunch of your mailbag questions. All right, no fan base has been on my ass more than the Sacramento Kings, who are riding a seven-game win streak. So to discuss what's been different in Sacramento, who better than talk to than Deuce and Mo? Deuce, Mo, what's going on?
I appreciate you having us, but you act like you don't deserve it. You are, no doubt about it, first-team Kings hater. First-team Sabonis hater. First thing, I think you hate all things Sacramento. And so we have to come here and set the record straight and get you to see clearly.
Oh, God.
Hi, KOC.
Yeah, and I think I honestly think he has notes written down to just crap on you.
I would never.
It's okay. Totally fine if you do. I mean, Kings have won seven in a row. After I said they should trade Fox, that a new coach would make no difference at all. Doug Christie, it's not going to matter. It's not going to change anything. And yet the Kings are, ever since he took over, including the loss, fifth in offensive rating, sixth in defensive rating. Sabonis looks like an all-NBA guy, absolute dominant force. Doug Christie looks like a coaching god. Vivek looks like a genius for firing Mike Brown. So you already laid it on me, Deuce. Morgan, you got anything to add there?
You son of a... I swear to God, KOC. No, I'm kidding. So I think we need to come here today, and what we need to hear from you is not an apology.
No.
But we need to hear a little bit more love for someone that, for some reason, you hate his game on the floor so much, even though he is so reliable. He is so consistent. His numbers are not empty. And you're seeing that they can translate into so many W's if everything is put into the right place. Domas Sabonis.
All right, let's start with Sabonis then.
Thank you.
He's a good player. He's a great player sometimes. And he added the three. We talked about that last offseason or the offseason before. At some point, you and I talked about he needs to add the three-pointer. He's done that. Over 40% from three. He's up on his attempts. It's nice to see that. Continues to dominate. What he did to Horford and Porzingis, I mean, that was like schoolyard bully, JV versus the varsity team type of stuff. He looked like a dominant force out there in that Boston game. You got to credit Sabonis for the improvements there. And I think defensively, over this recent stretch, he's been really good as well. You get the Kings defense. Like, the biggest difference that I've seen, I think a lot of things are similar. I want to ask you guys what you're seeing that's different so far, but I think Keon Ellis playing, obviously, Devin Carter coming out, he makes his debut. Kings are blitzing more often in pick and roll situations. 19% of on ball screens they've blitzed since Doug Christie took over, up from 13% prior. So I think they're playing a more aggressive style, and Sabonis is really flourishing in that. But I think ultimately a lot of the stuff is the same. He's just continuing to flourish. He's turned it up more, though.
I think we went over the three-point stuff way too fast, KOC. We've been begging this guy, shoot more threes, okay?
Yes.
Last year in 82 games, he shot 87 threes. Through 36 games this year, he has taken 87 threes.
It's amazing.
And he's shooting it at a high rate. He is 40 of 87 from three this year. And you could tell he's just more confident with it. And that's a credit to him for just working on the game and getting to a point where he feels good about it. So I think that's a huge development in this game. He's not hesitating anymore from downtown. And I think that just opens up the Kings offense for so much more, because the reality is teams still don't totally trust him from three, right? Like, because he hasn't done it throughout his career. So he's going to get good looks.
But the understanding, though, too, it with him understanding that he needed to evolve. He reflected, understand where the big in the NBA is going. I'm not the biggest big out here. I'm not going to protect the rim at all times, but I'm going to finish off a defensive play with a rebound. I rebound the hell out of the basketball. And I'm going to keep trying to get better at my game by being able to stretch the floor. And for him to actually be able to execute that and execute at a high clip of what we're seeing in, especially in these wins, what that does for an entire offense, not only him becoming a threat from the outside, but opening up the paint for one of the fastest players in the NBA and De'Aaron Fox to go downhill and do what he needs to do, KOC. I mean, it is the recipe to success. And that is starting with someone just reflecting and putting in the work.
Oh, let's also acknowledge today. Oh, you having us on, having this conversation? They're reigning Western Conference Player of the Week.
Say it louder.
Domantas Sabonis.
Say it louder.
No, I do think he deserves more love. And he does the little things that don't show up on the box score sometimes, right? The reality of just like creating space inside, shielding off the defender to create driving lanes.
The screening is like, he's one of the five best, two, maybe top two best screeners in the league. He's unbelievable.
Leads the NBA in screen assists. He had eight yesterday against the Bulls. So yeah, he plays with force. He's strong. Yeah, he's got his limitations. I feel like so many times with Sabonis, we talk about what he can't do as opposed to what he can do. The rebounding, yeah, defensive rebounding is great. Well, he's near the top of the NBA in offensive rebounds too. This is a possession game. You get more possessions, I like your chances of winning. He creates that. And I think right now the Kings are playing to more of what we thought they could offensively before the season, right? The ball movement's way better. They've simplified things offensively. They're kind of letting their skilled offensive players cook. Sabonis, smart player. Let him do stuff out there. Malik Monk, De'Aaron Fox, DeMar DeRozan. These guys know how to play basketball. So let them do their things out there, let it flow. And then late game, if you need a bucket, Debo has you, and he's closed a lot of games recently for the Kings.
And you mentioned simplifying the offense. I mean, I think letting Malik Monk cook is one of those. In the three games Fox didn't play, he logged 26 assists, 10 turnovers. And even in the five games Fox did play, 34 assists, 13 turnovers. So in these last eight games, he's averaging 7.5 assists under Doug Christie, up from 4.7 in the previous 24 games. More touches, more playmaking opportunities. It feels like they're feeding Malik Monk more. But I'm curious, like, you guys talk about the offense has been simplified. In what ways has it been simplified, and the way you've watched the team over these last eight games? Like, what has Christie done to simplify this offense?
He's empowered them to play basketball, to play freely. And I guess where you can go to, if you're really trying to break that down, you think about them or any coach wanting a team to run through an entire action, an entire play, you know, where you get that DHO to the flex cut to, you know, everyone balls on the weak side. What, go all the way through it before we try and look for a shot, or go all the way through it and get De'Aaron to go downhill. There aren't as many rules, it feels like. And it feels like without those rules, there are smart enough guys on this team, some high IQ players that are just flowing with where their body is taking them, where the ball is taking them. And they're all playing for each other, being willing cutters, being willing passers, willing screeners. And when you have a team that has that type of trust, let them ball, let them play. And I think that's what Doug is kind of going into right now with the Kings offense.
There's definitely less thinking, right? It's just going out there. I think so many times guys were like, we got to get to our spots. Oh, are we just hunting mismatches constantly? And I think that was a lot of that, of hunting mismatches, which, you know, a lot of times you maybe look for that more in late game situations. So there was constantly like thinking guys in the wrong spots. It just didn't flow the same. And so I think just allowing them to, Morin's point, go out there and flow and do their thing has been huge for them. And I got to be honest, I think the other thing that some of the guys have commented on since a coaching change, and maybe something like we overlook, I like Mike Brown. I thought Mike Brown kind of changed the culture here. He brought a soul back to this team, you know, brought some respectability back to the organization. He did a lot of great things. I think Mike became very rigid, and he had these high expectations. He wanted desperately to make this team a championship team when, like, probably not ready for that right now, right? They don't have the pieces, they don't have the personnel, whatever, but he wanted that. And he had like really high standards. So I think at times maybe micromanage things. And the point I'm getting to is the practice thing. There's not a lot of time to practice in the NBA, but like they would fly. Let's just say they land in Chicago. Sometimes they would go practice right when they land. And this is after like playing a game or something. And I think during this long grind of an 82 game season, even if you're not going hard at practice, if you're there for 2 hours, it's mentally exhausting. You just got off a plane. I think that wears on you a little bit. And what you're seeing is like, I think right now, one change that Doug's made is like, all right, we're not scrimmaging all the time. We're not going to practice right when we land. We're still going to put in the work. We're going to scout. We're going to go through things on the court, but we need to be fresh for games. And the big talking point from them is like, the starters feel better going into games right now, and you're seeing the results.
And I think that the stuff like that, that you don't necessarily see, are the difference makers with this Kings team. Cause it's like, you know, you look at time of possession metrics. It's not like they're playing significantly faster. They were ninth in possession time, according to Unpredictable, prior to the Mike Brown firing, 10th since. 3-point rate, it's not like they're shooting a ton more threes. 41% of their total shots under Doug Christie are three-pointers, up from 39.2% under Mike Brown. So it's not a dramatic difference there. So I think with this team, like, they're winning the rebounding battle. Sabonis is able to put out more energy for rebounds. Like, the 28 rebounds he had against Boston, I mean,
it
still blows my mind. Yeah, it's nuts. Like, the amount of effort it takes and intensity it takes to do that is really admirable.
I know.
You know, KOC?
What?
Kings fans, I think, judge you a lot based on what you put out on X. Right?
Why is that?
Because
look, Sabonis, was I right that he needed to add the three-pointer? Was I right that he could?
It's an approach, right? It seems like anytime you tweet about Sabonis, it's not the most flattering thing. Like, I think some people are going, hey, where's KOC after he had 28 rebounds and a big win in Boston without De'Aaron Fox? Where's KOC at? Seems like when things are going poorly in Sacramento, yes, or Sabonis maybe has a bad game, it's like, you are the first to point it out. But where is KOC missing in action when this guy is putting together some really good basketball?
But not only that, though, I think because you are someone who I obviously enjoy when I hear you talk basketball, and I think you have enough respect of the game to not just put out that crap and make sure that you're putting out the other crap too. And that's where I don't get mad at you, because I know you, but at the same time, I understand why everyone else is like, what the hell is this troll doing? Like, respect the game, respect the player, KOC.
People look at you and go, that he hates the Kings.
Yeah.
Like, what?
I don't know why. I love Keon Ellis.
I know. I
love Keon Ellis. I said Devin Carter would go down as one of the steals of the draft.
You did too.
I call it like I see it. And I think with the criticisms I've had of the Kings, the stuff about Fox, the lack of a jumper, reliable, consistent jumper, that's real. Sabonis, I still think he has defensive ceiling limitations in the postseason. For the Kings, I don't want the Kings to be some team hovering around 500. I think the Kings still need to make moves.
Yeah,
they do.
So I think it's fair to point out some of the flaws with the star players. It's also fair to point out some of the wins for the organization. Like, Devin Carter, I think, is going to go down the steal of the draft.
What?
And that could change things for them.
I want you, after we're done with this, to go on social media and say something nice. Not about Devin Carter, not about Keon Ellis. I want to say something nice about
We're recording this podcast right now.
Something.
And it's gonna go out entirely on social media.
KOC.
And the comment in that post will be something positive about the team riding a 7-game winning streak. Because Kings fans are...
He will, but this is something that we said over the summer when we were talking to each other. And we said, because you just point out flaws of De'Aaron, of Domas. And I said, AOC, every single player in this league has flaws.
Of course.
And so that's, I think that is the thing when you are just gravitating to the flaws of some of the best players in the world, in the best league in the world. Like, you got to give a little bit more love than gravitating to the negative stuff.
Everybody knows the thing Sabonis does incredibly well. It's like, what more can he do? Adding the three, he's done it. And look how it has changed things for him and for the offense. It's like for years, like the way I would criticize Russell Westbrook. On this podcast later in the episode, we talk about Russ and the improvements he's made, the off-ball cutting with Denver and all that. And that's like, oh, what a relief to see him doing that playing next to Jokic. Like, it's, yes, finally he's doing that even more often. With Sabonis, it's like, whoo, he's doing it. Like, he actually extended his range. It's not like he was a poor mid-range shooter. What was it, last year or the year before, he had, like, some down numbers. But throughout his career, he's been, like, 70-plus percent from the free throw line, 42 or so percent from mid-range. He's got touch. He's got the hook shot inside the paint. He has touch. So it's like, huh, he seems like a good candidate to be one of those bigs that can add the three. And that's important for helping, you know, if he's not never going to be some elite paint protector, which he's not, he can be like, he's been pretty good this stretch. He's been really good this stretch.
Yeah.
If he can be at least average on defense, but also plus, plus, plus offensively, like the pros end up significantly outweighing the cons.
And I
understand the point about the criticism of the Kings, but I also think maybe I'm just one of the few voices that's been super critical of the Kings. I think that's fair as well.
KOC, to be honest, I just, in general, don't think Sabonis maybe gets some of the love he deserves. And I think part of that is because of the issues you raise. And like, dude, he's not the longest guy. I don't think his defensive issues, I don't think you ever watch Sabonis and go, man, you know what? He's just not giving his all defensively. Like, he plays really hard. He rebounds well. He gets beat up. Like, he fights through things, right? And I think even defensively during this stretch, it looks good. But one of the things we've all talked about,
he also plays almost every game.
Yes.
82 games last year, 79 games the year before, every game this year. Like, Sabonis is always playing. Always.
And something we had talked about, I think, in the summertime, too, is like when you have a team with Sabonis on it, well, you got to cover up some of those weaknesses, right? Okay, he's not super long. Do you have some length out there? Do you have the right perimeter guys? And something you were just touching on, you know, Keon Ellis is finally getting the minutes he has really deserved, right?
What did Mike Brown not like about Keon Ellis? Like, what were the drawbacks from Keon Ellis that Mike Brown just wasn't having?
I think his approach was different because if you go back to last year, there were times Mike Brown was raving about his defensive instincts, saying like, I've never seen a young player with the defensive instincts like Keon Ellis. But I think his way of coaching sometimes was if Keon made a mistake, Keon, go sit on the bench and you're out. And that was a lot of the Kings bench. The bench wasn't productive because the bench rotation was never consistent. If some of these guys with shorter leashes made mistakes, they sat in the bench, maybe played 2 minutes, maybe played 3 minutes in a game. And now Keon is allowed to fight through the mistakes. He had a bad turnover in that double OT game against Miami. And then, you know what? He didn't get pulled from that game. They left him in there and he made some big time defensive plays. Young players have to work through things. And I think that's one area that's been a lot better. Mike Brown didn't trust these guys enough to go out there and fight through the mistakes.
And obviously different coaching personalities are going to do different things to different players and everything. And there was a time where I felt like maybe everyone was a little bit soft with the Sacramento Kings because of the way that Mike Brown was coaching and it wasn't working. But then when the firing happens and Doug Christie steps in and everything just starts going in the other direction of what you kind of thought this season was going to start off like, you do take a step back and go, okay, well, maybe that technique wasn't right for this personnel, for this team. I still think Mike Brown is a basketball mind, a fantastic person, and can still do so much in this league. But I think when you look at this roster, the personalities, and someone like Keon Ellis, he needed to be empowered and have that trust in him and that if he was going to make a mistake, he was going to learn from it on the floor with the experience and not by sitting his ass on the bench.
Yeah, and his mistakes weren't like you weren't watching Keon and going, oh man, he's just not trying out there. Like, these young players are going to make mistakes. Every player is going to make mistakes. You got to let them bite through it a little bit. So I think Keon playing more has been big. And then someone you liked, and I know you had a great conversation with over the summertime, was Devin Carter. Oh, yes.
Good job.
And,
he's been awesome. Oh my God.
I know, like, he's 6'3", but I don't think anyone watches Devin Carter play basketball and go, he's 6'3". Because of that 6'9 wingspan, because of that, 42-inch vertical, his rebounding is outrageous. His ability
he's averaging like 8 rebounds per 36 already. It's like exactly what he did last year with Providence. Dude checks every single box as a rookie for like, oh, he can do this well. He can do that pretty good. Oh, he does that at a great level defensively already. And the jumpers he hit over Porzingis at the start of the fourth quarter, Boston had a big on him basically the whole game. Cornette earlier in the game, Carter hit a three, then hit the two big threes at the start of the fourth quarter. And then they put Pritchard on him after that. He just blew by him.
Oh, yes.
Like Devin Carter is, I don't know. Like, to me, he's one of those guys, like a swing piece for Sacramento, where he could be one of those guys that ends up changing what the complexion of the team could look like, especially next to Keon Ellis, who's just racking up deflections up there with Dyson Daniels ever since Doug Christie took over, 6 deflections per game. So those guys as a duo, you know, with all the other pieces, it just like it's part of this defensive identity that's happening right now in Sacramento.
You just brought up the deflections. Keon had a game. I think it was against Miami, 15. Right? He had 15 deflections.
That's 15.
You know, the same game, Sabonis had 8. Shout out Sabonis. no, but anyway, I'm getting to what I mean, you know, bringing up Keon and Devin and even Keegan Murray's ability to defend. You know, I thought he did a nice job on Tatum in that Boston game. Having some good perimeter defenders takes the pressure off Domantas Sabonis a little bit too. So I think that's where you're seeing the strides defensively. Even Trey Lyles, you know, he had some injuries early in the season. He's come back, finally getting in shape. Malik Monk joked the other day, he's like, yeah, Trey was fat, you know, and now he's getting into the game shape. He's rebounding well. I just think they just look really together right now. Yeah. And it's been impressive that this group has found a way to kind of dig out of this. Now, how they keep it going is a question.
I think that's the thing, KOC. You know, we talk about what is working for this team right now. And I agree, when you're looking at this roster and you're going, it's not complete. Like, you're going to have to make tweaks depending on what level you want to get to. Right now, the level is just like coming back from
the dead.
Literally coming back from the dead. And that's what they're starting to do. And you're even seeing, they had like a small ball rotation in the other night and they were just playing even faster. It was like Devin Carter, Fox, or whoever else was in the lineup. But I just remember that it was just moving up and down the floor, and they're still able to defend big because Devin Carter plays so much bigger than he really is. And then it's like Deuce was kind of saying, that second line of defense, it takes so much pressure off of whoever's supposed to be there protecting the rim. One, because they're getting in the right place at the right time. They're not just being at the block or being too close to the rim. They're getting their body in the right place and being there in help. But also that perimeter pressure is relentless. It's there and it's disrupting. And that is what we've been seeing in the last 7 games.
I mean, and the Kings have beat some pretty formidable opponents too. Obviously, that Boston game being one of their better wins of this stretch. The second team so far this year to hold Boston under 100 points. OKC was the other team to do that. They beat the Heat in an 2 overtime, double overtime game. They beat the Grizzlies, beat the Sixers. Some really good wins. And up next on the schedule, some really tough opponents as well. They face the Bucks on the road on Tuesday, then a homestand against the Rockets, Wizards, and Warriors before Nuggets and Knicks on the road. So that's their next 6 games with some tough opponents mixed in there. How long do you guys think this streak goes?
Ooh.
Great question. Never even thought it was going to start.
Yeah. you know what? I think they beat Milwaukee. Setting
Milwaukee
up a very interesting
stumbling sometimes.
Yeah.
Up and down constantly this year.
But they're going to want to bounce back after that last crap game.
Yeah, maybe. So. Maybe. I think it's going to set up an interesting showdown Thursday night. Kings riding an 8-game winning streak. The last time they had an 8-game winning streak, by the way, Doug Christie was the starting shooting guard. You have to go back to 03-04, which is crazy.
What is that?
Yeah, so you have to go back.
How poetic would that be?
Kind of interesting. And so that Rockets game is a TNT game, so that would be a lot of fun. Yeah. You know, there's still a lot. You know, this stretch is going to be interesting, right? Because it's going well. What's it going to look like the first time they hit adversity? The De'Aaron Fox situation, like, where is he at? I think right now, I think he's in a really good spot. I think he feels good about things. Like, the team's playing well. He talked about last night after the game, like, Doug Christie's energy has been contagious for that group. So I think they're kind of feeling, you know, vibing off that right now. But when adversity hits, what's that look like? I think the Fox conversation will be a bigger one come the offseason to see kind of where he is at and where the team's at.
Now, we had a mailbag question from Ishmael, and Ishmael asked, should my Kings go for it and try to acquire a Cam Johnson-level talent and attempt a playoff push, or should they more or less stand pat and then assess the De'Aaron Fox situation this summer? What do you guys think?
I just don't think standing pat is the move. Does it have to be Cam Johnson? I don't think it has to be Cam Johnson, but some sort of tweak. I mean, I think behind Sabonis, the small ball thing with Trey Lyles has worked recently, but I think that needs to be addressed. It's clear they haven't trusted any of their backups. Alex Len has been the guy. Orlando Robinson, he was here for a second. He's no longer here. Mm-hmm. They don't really have a guy they trust. And then they need another wing. You know, I was looking at someone like Dorian Finney-Smith for them. I thought it would have made a lot of sense before he went to the Lakers. But Cam Johnson, you think about his size and shooting ability. Yeah, I mean, I think they could definitely use something like that. Standing pat just doesn't make sense.
You make tweaks now and you see what you need to do in the summer, in the offseason as well.
Yeah, if you have to trade Fox in the offseason, I don't think like you're going to be in an awful position either, because I think you get some young talent back, some maybe some picks, and then you still have a pretty good team.
And making the tweaks now at the trade deadline could allow you to even make more decisions, obviously, going into the offseason. And you don't make moves just to make moves, but at the same time, I think what we have seen is that there's been so many almost moves with this team, and then how this season began was like, oh, well, this is why they are where they are. And now you're understanding maybe they were there too because of whatever was going on with their relationship with the head coach as well. But at the same time, I think we know how this league works. And if you want to make sure you're always getting better, you're always got to be active and making some moves.
Well, for what it's worth, I think Cam Johnson would be a great fit with the Kings offensive system wise. I mean, the dude, movement shooter coming off of screens and handoffs. Imagine him in two-man actions with Sabonis. Like, he can handle the ball. He's doing a hell of a lot more this year with Brooklyn. So, hey, he can attack closeouts, run an occasional pick and roll. And the size defensively, he's not a great defender by any means, but he has some length, has some size. I think he could help there. So, a trade idea that I have in mind that could address both of the points you mentioned, Kevin Huerter and Trey Lyles with two firsts, because that's been reported what the Nets want for Cam Johnson, Cam Johnson and De'Ron Sharpe. The two firsts, that's where I have some hesitations there. I'd want to protect those firsts, but even then I wouldn't feel great about tying up two firsts for Cam Johnson. I mean, Cam Johnson is a really good player for all the reasons we're talking about, but to me, I'd feel more comfortable giving up one first and then, two seconds or something like that. But De'Ron Sharpe, to me, Trey Lyles is a bigger name. He is a three-point shooter. But De'Ron Sharpe, I think he's underrated. He's a great rebounder. He can pass the ball as a big. He's got size. I'd be intrigued with him in that kind of small ball five role with those backup units. Not perfect, though, because like you said, Trey Lyles has been better recently. You could also do that deal, removing Lyles, removing De'Ron Sharpe. It's just the Kings would be adding more salary and would have to give up other guys in that deal rather than Trey Lyles. Yeah. But two firsts for Cam Johnson. Would you guys be comfortable giving up two?
It scares me.
Are you just out? Because you just said you want to add somebody, Deuce. You want to do something, but you got to pay up.
It scares me. And then you also wonder, like, there's been enough noise that Oklahoma City has some interest in Cam Johnson. And it's like they have like 1,800 first round picks, right?
They can make any offer.
Yeah. And that's what's going to be tough. So, if you're going to get a bidding war, is that going to be enough to elevate you to where you want to be? And then, like, what if at the end of the year, let's just say, okay, you make that move, you give up a couple of first round picks, and you make it to the first round, get eliminated in six games. And then De'Aaron's like, all right, well, all right, let's talk about moving me. Okay. Well, that's going to be tough, right? Now you can get some picks back, but how good are those picks going to be? The two first round picks, I'm out. I'm out on that.
Okay, Sharks.
I'll consider one. I'm out.
I
Morgan's more about like, who cares? I don't care about Pixie more to win.
For a long time, I was so patient. I was so cute with all these picks. And like, no, don't mess anything up. Screw it. Sell them all. Do what you got to do. I'm so evil now. I'm just like, yeah, get rid. Like, mortgage the future. I don't care anymore, because you're seeing Sacramento in this small market not be able to just like take that next level. And what we felt with that Beam team 2 years ago was a Costco sample size, and we had so much fun. It was the best thing that ever happened to any of our lives in Sacramento. And now we went down a little bit last year, and then you start the season, you go way down, you go into this depressing hole. And so, yeah, I reached a point where I'm like, mortgage the future. Probably not the right thing, just going off of emotions and everything. But at the same time, in a small market, when you are competing in the Western Conference, I just don't know what else the answer is.
And I think the other point is, like, the West, it's pretty, I'm not going to say it's wide open, but I think Oklahoma City is, like, by far the favorite, right? Like, there's, after that, though.
I agree.
You know? Well, and who knows what can happen. Like, Oklahoma City is so far ahead of, I think, everyone in the West, and Chet is not back yet. So, you know, imagine when Chet gets back, Caruso, all that stuff. But, you never know what can happen, and might as well put yourself in a position to compete.
I think you gotta. I mean, you really gotta. I mean, the Kings have too much good talent not to give it a try, and you never know what can happen in the postseason. Right now, they're only six back from the two seed. Only six.
I was even looking at that. I was going two out of five or something like that. I think they're close.
Only 2.5 back from the five seed. Only 3.5 back from the four seed. So, like, that's how close the West is right now. And they're also only a game up on the 12. So everything's very condensed for the Western Conference right now. So I think for the Kings, I mean, I still think, regardless of what happens this season, I still think exploring those Fox trades could be in their best interest this offseason. But that's in part because of how bullish I am on Devin Carter. And what I believe he can be in the long term. I think that dude's got star upside. And even if he's not like your traditional, you know, top 15 player, but if he's the 30th or 35th best player, he's one of those guys that's going to be making a massive, massive winning impact for your team. Kind of like for Boston, Jrue Holiday, Derek White, that type of guy, except I think he can do even maybe more in a higher volume than some of those guys. I just think that guy's got leadership potential, checks every single box. So I think for Sacramento, that's more of an offseason question, as you guys said, at this point, considering the recent winning and how good things look with Christie. Obviously, things can change in 3 weeks ahead of the deadline, but it's looking more like, at this point, the Kings should be one of those buyers. And if, like, look, Kevin Huerter's playing like 12 minutes a game under Doug Christie. He's got a $16 million salary. That's the guy you move, whether it's for Cam Johnson or somebody else. Kings got to be looking to make some additions. Is there anybody else in the NBA that Kings fans or you guys feel like, this is a dream trade target for us? Because Cam Johnson seems to be the popular one.
I feel like Cam is that one right now. Like, other fans have mentioned Kyle Kuzma. And he scares the hell out of me, I got to be honest.
That doesn't do anything for me.
Right.
I don't know.
You know, I do remember Doug Christie, the broadcaster.
Oh.
Loved Kyle Kuzma before the Lakers draft.
Really? Oh.
And so I just, you know, I keep that in the back of my head a little bit. Not that he's making personnel decisions, but, you know, I mean, Kuzma's having an awful year. There's no doubt about it. But you go, God, I mean, I don't know. Can you get him going in a redder direction?
Can Can you get him inspired? Can you put him in a situation where he's feeling good, playing good basketball, not just chucking up a whole bunch of shots, playing a little bit more discipline? My answer is, like, probably not.
He's athletic, runs
but
the floor.
At the same time, like, you never know in this league. You never know with what the situation can be.
Let's just say that one doesn't excite me. Okay. Other than that, like, I don't know. You know, it feels like a very interesting market. It's not like there are a ton of names out there. You know, one I was just having fun with recently, and this was inside joke, but this is when the Kings were in a really bad spot. I was like, I don't know. Like, do you just take a swing at Zion? Like, who cares? Like, let's go all in. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. That's how insane I was feeling at one point. And then I watched the first game back, and I'm like, see?
And then he's suspended. Oh, that's why.
You can be late to any flight if you could stay on the floor.
No. Hey, no more practices to be late for in Sacramento,
no.
Right?
Both of you, no, it's not. Okay.
Are you ready for the games?
Perfect fit, Deuce and Mo. Any other final shots you want to take at me? I'm right
no,
here.
No
right
shots.
Here.
You know,
are
we
all done? No.
I guess the only thing I ask is, you know, like, I just
ask something.
Yeah, I mean,
just a nice post when I put this out there. Sabonis is great.
Something Sabonis nice. Love would be nice for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that would be the big thing because, you know, Kings fans always ask, God, KOC always talks bad about the Kings and you guys talk to him, blah, blah, blah. I'm like,
yeah,
KOC?
You're making our lives hard.
I've talked to many times, the nicest guy on the planet. And then you have, he disarms you when you go on his podcast because he's like, no, Sabonis does this well. I'm like, how come that is not in text form on X? What you said about Sabonis, the love you gave him, I want to read it in 240 characters.
I'll have this transcribed and condensed.
You know what? I've seen you write 1,000-word pieces X.
Good
I
job.
Want some deep dive into what Sabonis is doing well this year.
Yes. And not in none of your like
snarky, like shots.
Where like you say something good, but then you have to say 5 bad things because you're bad, Kevin O'Connor. Ooh, dark spot. No, get out of there. Yeah, it's like stop with that. It's KOC, do better because you are better. And don't be like all the other idiots or trolls or whatever that don't celebrate the game to the fullest and celebrate these players to the fullest, because what you're watching with Sabonis right now, it's not about regretting ever what you put out there or whatever. It's more just like, you are a basketball person. You love the game. You cover the game. So like, celebrate it a little bit more with the positives, and who cares what anyone else is going to say.
If you acknowledge the bad, you gotta acknowledge the good sometimes.
Hey, I mean, I'm glad he's shooting threes. Very happy to see him shooting threes. Still would love to see another rim protector added behind him who could play alongside him on the floor.
Adding
two bigs, that's the next ingredient for the Kings, in my opinion. Have a 5 who could protect the rim, because Sabonis now can space the floor on offense. It's a whole new ingredient for that team if they add that. Maybe more of an offseason question.
Yeah.
But Deuce, Mo, thank you so much for joining me tonight. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, appreciate you,
KOC.
Oh, and great job on the song, Morgan, as well. That was awesome. Amazing. Everybody go to Deuce and Mo's YouTube channel, and their top video right now is a perfect song cover by Mo. Just go check it out.
Thanks.
All right, now time for some mailbag questions. First one from Mike. Is Big Baller Brand back? Yes, baby. Big Baller Brand is back. I've been waiting to wear this shirt probably for many years. I don't know what year I bought it. When I pulled it out, still in the original packing, had the large sticker on and had to pull that off before hopping on the podcast because it's a perfect day to wear it. LiAngelo Ball, $9 million deal, a record deal with Def Jam and Universal Music. Lonzo Ball back in the starting lineup for the first time since January 14th, 2022. He had 15 points on 9 shots for the Bulls. And then you have LaMelo Ball having an unbelievable season for the Hornets this year, leading all East guards in votes. So he's probably going to start the game for one of the 3 teams this year with the new tournament style. Big opportunity for him. Big opportunity for Lonzo back in the starting lineup. And then LiAngelo. I mean, the song's good. It's a good song. It reminds me of early 2000s, mid 2000s. I'm just happy for the Ball family. I'm happy for LeVar Ball, especially. All of these t-shirts sold. LeVar, I mean, he won. He did it. His plan worked. You got to hand it to LeVar Ball. I'm very happy for all of them because that's a family that has been through adversity. Obviously, Melo's dealt with injuries. Lonzo, more than anybody, dealing with injuries, like almost 3 years to the day, nearly, that back in the starting lineup. That's crazy. And then LiAngelo, in and out of the league. It's kind of cool to see him carving out a lane in a different way. Next question from Jared. What happened to Tyler Hero's game this year? I had a lot of Heat fans in my mentions over the weekend as well because Miami just absolutely throttled, destroyed, dismantled the Portland Trailblazers, and Heat fans are still salty about not getting Damian Lillard, even though it worked out for the best. Because here's the thing. With Hero, I don't think anybody could have anticipated that he would turn into this player. This player being a guy averaging 23.8 points, 5 assists, 5.6 boards, career high from 3, career high from 2. And according to Synergy Sports, he's in the 80th percentile or higher scoring off of screens, out of handoffs, and spot-ups. Nobody could have seen this transformation coming, right? Where he becomes this player after seemingly plateauing for a while after his highs in the bubble. Hero said he's trying to resemble Stephen Curry. Eric Spoelstra recently alluded to that as well, I think after that Blazers game. And most players just, they don't change the way we've seen Hero change his game. It's unusual to see a guy change in the ways that Hero has, because think about his entire career. Here we have his shot location numbers. Throughout his career, 12.6% of his shots came in the restricted area, 20.4% in the paint, 22.7% from mid-range, 44.3% from three-point range. That has been altered dramatically, suddenly, overnight, because of his intentions to play more like Steph. Now, mid-range dropping from 22.7% to 7.9%, three-point up 44.3% to 55.2%. In the paint, about the same, 20.4% to 19.1% this year. Restricted area, getting to the paint a lot more now, 12.6 in the restricted area to 17.8. So you have Hero overhauling his shot selection suddenly. It's like this just doesn't happen. Players don't suddenly change like this. There's usually a progression. But Hero went from a guy taking a lot of mid-range last year to barely taking them at all this year. And instead, he's taking more threes. Instead, he's getting to the rim more often. He's gotten stronger. He's looking to playmake more often. That's why we're seeing him with career-high numbers with passes per game, potential assist, total assists. You could argue if his teammates were hitting more jumpers, he'd be averaging closer to 6 or 7 assists per game rather than just 5. So you have Hero physically developed. His game has developed. His approach has developed. And so for Miami, I know the Jimmy Butler controversy and everything going on is a disappointment right now, but it really worked out not getting Damian Lillard. And that's because of the sudden development of Tyler Hero. So yes, you know, that deal probably would have been better to take player-wise for Portland, but they did that deal for picks, not for a Hero. But ultimately for the Miami Heat, they come out winners. Number 3, I've also been harassed all weekend by everybody on X. Russell Westbrook update. Got that question a bunch of different times because I was critical of Russ earlier in the year. I was critical of Russ last offseason. I said I felt sick to my stomach with the idea of the Nuggets signing Russell Westbrook after the disastrous seasons he had with both Los Angeles teams. But you know what? It's looking like I was wrong, at least right now. He's started 10 consecutive games. He's averaging 16 points, 8.1 assists, 7.7 boards in those 10 games. In those last 10 games, the Jokic-Russ lineup has a plus 19.1 net rating. And so you could say that this is just small sample size and that it falls back down to earth. That could be what happens. But it's been like a steady ascent. Step by step, it felt like Russ and Jokic have gotten better and better and better together. Earlier in the season, it was not working for Russ. It got a little bit better, a little bit better. And now it's at the point where you have these guys that it feels like the best two-man combo on the Nuggets. And the numbers do show that. This season, Russ is passing the ball to Jokic 52% of the time they're on the court together. He has 88 assists to Jokic to only 67 for Murray, 41 for MPJ. And so those numbers show how much Russ is looking for Jokic. He is passing the ball to him more than half the time over anybody else on Denver, and he's successfully doing it because we know Russ is a great playmaker. Together, they are scoring 1.1 points per handoff. So this is when Jokic is the setter, the screener, and then Russ is the guy receiving that ball. That's better than Jamal Murray and Jokic, better than MPJ and Jokic. The last 10 games, that number has gone up to 1.4 points per handoff, but with that combination. So you have Russell Westbrook in this new role playing with Jokic, one of the greatest center of solar systems we've seen in basketball, with his ability to just orchestrate an offense. And Russ has changed. He's changed. He started to a bit last year with the Clippers after not changing enough with the Lakers. Last year, he started to cut more often with that Clippers offense. This year, like, it's everything I could have dreamed of. Like, with his athleticism, his quickness, his first step ability, it's working there. And I think one of the interesting ways to kind of feel the rush change is, like, Synergy Sports has this player comparison tool, and it kind of, the way it works is they look at play types, sets, how a player is being utilized, not just like points, assists, and rebounds and all stuff like that. It's what is this player being used as? In the last 3 years, the closest comparison going back each year was Dennis Smith, Jaden Ivey, Cade Cunningham. So that's 2 years with the Clippers, Smith and Ivey, and then Cunningham, the closest comparison player type wise when he was with the Lakers. This year, the top five player comparisons for Russell Westbrook play type wise are Josh Giddey, Scottie Pippen Jr., Denny Avdia, Bilal Coulibaly, Stephon Castle. And so you go from three guards that handle the ball a lot to a bunch of kind of quirky, positionless type of players who cut and move without the ball, who screen sometimes. To me, I think that is really indicative of who Russ has turned himself into. And so credit to Russ. Credit to Jokic. He's having another MVP caliber season. He very well might win it again. And one of the great arguments in his favor is he has just completely rejuvenated Russell Westbrook, and Russ has embraced that role, and credit to him. To me, I think it's very easy to say. You can look at the old meme of like, oh, this is the greatest player ever. Russell Westbrook, middle of the season, he always looks great, and then it's just dread in the playoffs. Maybe it'll end up like that again, but he's playing differently, and credit to him for doing it. It's very cool to see. Next up, question from Yale. How was everyone so wrong about the evaluation of Scoot Henderson? Was it simply the cool name? It might have just been the cool name. Scoot is a very cool name. It's a great nickname. It's not his real name, for what it's worth. Scoot Henderson's real name, let me pull that up real quick, is Sterling. Sterling Henderson, not quite as cool as Scoot, but it might have been the name. It's not the goggles for sure. Sometimes it's like he doesn't see out there. That's concerning. I'm worried about Scoot. He's shooting only 53% of the rim, not much better than last season. He's been blocked 21 times in the paint. He's making under 30% of his threes, only 29% of dribble jumpers. That includes mid-range as well. Only 33% of catch-and-shoot jumpers. So you have this guy that can't score from outside, who gets swatted away inside, and the passing ability, like, dude, some of the lobs he throws are just so off target. Sometimes he throws lobs and the player won't even know it's coming. Like, I just feel like he's not in sync with any of the screeners on the team. He forces passes into traffic. It's not just passes either. Like, it's the handle. Like, the handle gets so loose. There was this play against the Pistons the other week where Marcus Sasser was defending him, and Scoot's just bringing the ball up the floor, and Sasser just poof, quick swipe at the ball, and Scoot doesn't react. It just feels like he's slow out there with his movements, and this is a guy who... he was a top pick because speed and strength and athleticism. Now, to get back to your original question, Yale, I think people were wrong because his athleticism were overblown. I don't believe I have ever said at the time he was a Derrick Rose type athlete or a John Morant type athlete, but that is the way he was perceived by certain people. I think he was blown up, and fans may have perceived him that way. He is not that, as Blazers fans have found out. So that was overblown. And that year, like, I still had him ranked third. I was right to put Brandon Miller ahead of him second. Not very many people did that, but I was wrong to put him ahead of the Thompson twins. I wanted to do it. I just didn't. I was just too hesitant to do it because Scoot, you're betting on character. He's a good kid. He's a hard ass worker. He fights hard on the court, but the skills have just not at all caught up with the, you know, what you expected from him. And I don't feel good about it happening. I mean, he's only 20 years old. You're not going to give up on him entirely. He turns 21 on February 3rd, but I just don't see a lot of indicators that he's somebody the Blazers should be fully invested in. And that's where I'm really scared for them. Because if you miss out on a number three pick, the guy that you took to hopefully take over for Damian Lillard someday, that could set your franchise back for many, many years. Question number five from Henry. I noticed you've been posting a lot more about NBA Top Shot. Who are some buy lows I should be thinking about right now? But no rookies or second-year players. Okay. So no rookies, second-year players. Those are the obvious buy lows. I would say think about guys who could be traded from a bad team or an average team to a contender. Cam Johnson from the Nets. That's an obvious one. He's an elite shooter. Maybe he becomes a guy hitting big shots in the postseason for a really good team. You could think about, along those same lines, who are the potential playoff heroes? Guys like Lou Dort, Desmond Bane, Dean Wade, Jared Allen, like these guys who are, you know, are good players, but they haven't had their moments yet, whether they're role players or like borderline all-star types or all-stars like Jared Allen, for that matter. Those players in that kind of group who haven't had a moment yet, but could. Those are guys I'd be thinking about as well. But the number one guy as a potential buy low to me on Top Shot would be Cade Cunningham. Cade Cunningham, unbelievable this season. Had a whole podcast on him and the Pistons recently, averaging 24.2 points, 9.5 assists, 6.7 boards, and he's trending up. It feels like he's getting better as the season progresses. And so if you think about buy lows, you're thinking about growth opportunities. Cade, he should be an all-star. I think he should be an all-star. He should definitely be one of the 12 best players in the Eastern Conference. I'd be surprised if he doesn't make it. And if he doesn't make it, it's a big mistake. Two, the Pistons could make the playoffs. They're in it right now. They are in it. So if they make the playoffs, maybe he has a big series. There's a big moment there for him. And I don't quite think he's all NBA. But if he continues trending up, if he's an all-star, if the Pistons make the playoffs, if he has a huge final month, think about sometimes what happens end of year, guys go from averaging 25 points per game up to 28, 29, 30. I don't think you can rule out a guy who's averaging 24 points, nearly 10 assists, 7 rebounds just about, nearly a triple-double on really good efficiency, especially as of late. I don't think you can rule that guy out entirely as all-NBA. So Cade, to me, is the big buy-low guy of those star-level players right now because he hasn't quite hit nationally yet. Question six from Ben, and he has to be called this, Ben, the sad Pels fan in Beamtown. Beamtown being he's based in Sacramento and with the Sacramento Kings, had a great conversation about the Kings earlier. Well, unfortunately, he's not a Kings fan. Ben is a Pelicans fan, and he asks, what do the Pelicans do, man? The arena ownership situation seems bleak. The injury situation is worse than ever. And at this point, Ben says, I dread we are heading towards expansion followed by immediate sale and relocation of the Pelicans. Help me find something positive. I mean, there's really not much positive, Ben. You get the second worst record in the NBA. You get a chance at Cooper Flagg, who looks like a franchise changer. On the other hand, you could say, well, maybe Cooper Flagg would pull an Eli Manning, as Tom Haverstraw kind of alluded to recently, and say, I don't want to go to New Orleans. It's a wasteland there. Why would I want to go there? Why would I want to go to a team that hasn't won anything and has fallen short with former number one pick Zion, AD? Maybe that could happen. I wouldn't rule it out either. But you get a chance at Cooper Flagg. You're asking for something positive. Misi looks like a really good long-term center for you. That's something positive. Maybe he ends up winning Rookie of the Year, though I'm not so certain there. He ends up winning it over either of the Memphis guys. Trey Murphy, still really good. But, like, other than that, I mean, I can't even say it's positive for Herb Jones right now. His shot has fallen off a cliff. He's been hurt all year. I don't know, man. Like, I can't find much positive, and usually I'm pretty good at that, but I can't find much positive for your Pelicans. I'm sorry. Maybe you should become a Kings fan, but even then, we'll see how that continues there in Sacramento. Last question, James from London. Do you think the Magic could make a trade to increase their chances of postseason success? All right, I'd say yes. That's my initial thought. Yes, they could make a trade. Now, what do they need? They're 17th in three-point attempts per game. They're 30th in three-point percentage, really last in the league by a wide margin. I've talked on this podcast recently about how their offensive rating has declined throughout the season as they've lost more guys. Banchero being back hopefully helps that out, but I don't think they're going to be a top offense. They just don't have enough shooting, and that's why the idea of De'Aaron Fox, like everybody talked about Fox when the Kings were struggling around the time they fired Mike Brown. I hate the idea of De'Aaron Fox for the Orlando Magic. To me, he doesn't make any sense. I'd be looking at more of a guard who can shoot off the catch, shoot off the dribble, who's still a downhill attacker as well, but not De'Aaron Fox. And also, he'd cost a hell of a lot. I'd be thinking about kind of three tiers of guys. So let's kind of think about guys making 10 to 20 million, 20 to 30 million, and then over $30 million. First, Colin Sexton from the Utah Jazz. I mean, the dude's really good. Like he's a badass out there. He's a bull driving in the basket, shoots over 40% from three. Colin Sexton to me would be one of the top targets. He's a Cole Anthony upgrade. Now, trading Cole is complicated for Orlando. Cole Anthony is a huge chemistry guy in that locker room. How much do you balance chemistry for this team that really does have a lot of love for each other with just getting a better basketball player? That's going to be tough for them. Number two, I'd say Anfernee Simons. He's only 25 years old, kind of fits the timeline of this roster. Super versatile shooter. His numbers are a little bit down this year with Portland compared to the last two seasons, but this team, that Portland team stinks. I'd love to see him coming off of handoffs with Banchero and eventually Franz Wagner when he comes back and Wendell Carter and all these bigs. And he's very affordable for this Orlando team as well if it's Anfernee Simons. And then the expensive guy, I love the idea of Zach LaVine on the Magic. I know he cost a hell of a lot, $43 million this year, $46 million next year, and then $49 million the year after that. But like, you got to pay somebody. And that $49 million a year in the last year of his deal, that's going to be the first year of the Banchero rookie extension. So that's really the only year you'd feel really screwed with your salary numbers. But today and next season, you're talking about a guy that right now for Chicago, he's back to the guy who was a two-time All-Star, 24 points per game, six straight games scoring over 30 points with elite efficiency. Magic fans like just saw Cole Anthony score 27 points once, and they're like, Cole, I'm sorry for doubting you, but Cole Anthony is going to go right back to some of his inefficient, annoying, frustrating on-court nights where you're hoping Franz comes back soon and takes those touches away. Zach LaVine's not like that. Zach LaVine is elite from every single zone. He's a lob guy. He's a finisher on his own created shots. He's a pick and roll guy. He's a pull up guy. He's an ISO guy. He can shoot off of screens and handoffs. He could do everything within this Magic offense and really boost their numbers. And getting him's tough, of course. You're talking like Jonathan Isaac, Cole Anthony, Jet Howard, or Anthony Black. And trading Isaac's difficult, but I mean, dude, he's an elite defender. He shot well in the postseason last year, but he's an under 20 minutes per game guy. If he's not shooting it well, teams are going to be sagging off of him in the postseason. This team desperately needs shooting. And if you know you're getting Franz back, you just got Banchero back, you already got a bunch of bigs, Badazzi's development, Wendell Carter's still really good. I think Zach LaVine is worth thinking about for the Orlando Magic. And I know he's expensive, but to me, of the three names I mentioned, Colin Sexton, Anfernee Simons, Zach LaVine, he's the guy that would just move the needle the most for Orlando in terms of, wait a minute, could this team actually go all the way to the finals? But I understand the hesitation there. I completely get it. I know a lot of Magic fans are probably screaming at me. I'd love to get the feedback of Magic fans. I'd love to know what people think they should be doing. So hit me up at kocshow@yahoosports.com because I want feedback from you guys because I love the idea of LaVine. Also really like the idea of Colin Sexton as a lower end guy. But to me, Orlando, you got all of your future picks plus some other picks from future other teams as well. Like the window's open, man. The window is open. So I'd think about making that deal. I would think about making it when you have a defense that elite, when you just need that offensive spark. That's it for today, though. Appreciate my guests earlier, especially the Deuce and Mo joining to talk about the Kings. We will be back later in the week with Tom Haberstroh. We'll be talking a lot more about the NBA. Big week ahead. A lot of games to be played. Thank you to Emmy and Mike for producing today's episode. Hope you enjoy the rest of your week. Have a good one.